What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bomb City Locker Room Talk Podcast. You're listening to episode 163. As always, I'm Jim.
I'm Jim Bob Cooter.
And tonight, we're coming to you live from the King Residence, Snowmageddon 2026.
Yes, me and Jim are trapped in an iceberg right now. Yeah, it's Snowpocalypse 2026. How do you feel?
It's 6 degrees, isn't it?
Last we checked about an hour ago, so I'm sure it's colder than that by now. Speaking of which, real quick, Jim Bob Cooter, do you know who that is? That's a real person, by the way.
I don't know who that is. Elaborate.
You never heard that name?
No.
So he is actually one of the candidates to be offensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was the
random.
He was the passing trivia game coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts last year. And he is one of the candidates because him and fucking Nick Sirianni are friends and nobody wants to work with Nick. They lost out on Mike McDaniel. They're probably going to lose out on Brian Daboll, who I would have actually been okay with because he coached Jalen at Alabama. Mm-hmm. So I was fine with that. But one of the candidates is Jim Bob Cooter. And so I looked into this man and he had a DUI and a heroin some sort of drug charge. And he got, It's expunged off his record when he became an NFL coach.
Of course it is. That's the typical, you know, like, outcome of those type of offenses. They get washed away. Especially when you're at that level of coaching.
What's funny to me is, like, they were going to consider this dude. And I was like, they had a list of names. And he was, like, fourth on the list. And the name, just Jim Bob Cooter.
Dude, that is like a 1970s porn name.
That is the best name ever. And so it intrigued me enough to look into him. And I'm like, oh, this guy's just a legitimate piece of shit. And it's like, oh, well, he'd fit right in with the Eagles.
Oh, dude, scumbag nation. He's going to fit in just fine.
Speaking of Pennsylvania scumbags, we're recording this live from my living room because it's Snowpocalypse, the world's ending in Amarillo, Texas, because everybody freaks out when there's any amount of cold precipitation on the ground. But we're watching, we've got Viva La Bam on DVD.
Classic.
Playing in the background. So we'll just...
Is this really on DVD?
Yeah, this is season four that I've owned for years.
And you used to be a DVD king. Do you still own... No pun intended. Do you still own all of your DVDs?
No. There's a tote. We tried. We had a garage sale a couple of years ago, and I tried to get rid of all my DVDs because how bad was I at buying DVDs, James?
Religiously. Like, addiction style. Like,
I would get paid.
Novak addiction to, you know,
heroin
or any type of hard drug. And if you're a Viva La Bam fan, you know who Novak is. So
yeah, no, like I would so I worked at the United on Jim Lake and they put a Hastings right there when they first built that shopping center behind it, because if you remember at Jim Lake, yep, when everything in Amarillo started to expand to the southwest region, before it went south it was west, and they started at Jim Lake in the Boulevard area. Mm-hmm. That United was like one of the first things. My grandparents used to shop there back in like the early 2000s.
Yes.
And
it was that, like, yeah, the fucking rich United.
Yeah, it was like, oh,
it's like the Sauncey United now.
Market Street existed, but, or did the Jim Lake one come first?
No, Market Street existed first.
And then the Jim Lake one, right?
I believe so, yeah.
But it was there before, because yes, that's right. So the Jim Lake United was brand new. And it was before they did the renovations to the 45th United and all that shopping center like got added. That, like, when that Jim Lake United got built, everybody was like, this is it. This is the new grocery store to go to.
Yeah.
So that was my first job. And I worked there for 6.5-7 years because I worked there for a little bit and Chili's at the same time. And they put a Hastings, and it was back when, you know, we were all trying to imitate these guys and Jackass and do crazy stuff with camcorders and all these things. And much like we do now, where we try to imitate people and do a podcast.
Right, right, right. We're doing our best Joe Rogan impression right now.
Yeah.
It's working out for us. Hey, this is 6 years, going on 6 years for Bomb City Locker Room Talk Podcast. So,
and this is episode what?
Shout out, 163.
163, okay, cool. Glad to have, I'm in the
this
words.
This is the first one of the new year.
That, in the words of what it, like, I don't know if it was Marshawn Lynch or no, he was just like, I'm here so I don't get fined. My thing to say now is that I say at work, because if I'm like mad at work, but I don't want to appear mad.
Yeah.
Anybody asks like, how you doing? I just look at them, smile. I'm just happy to be here. Just happy to be here, man.
And we'll bring you on every couple months because it's going to get hectic here this year, but we're still kicking. You think we're dead, but we rise from the ashes.
I haven't been on this podcast in, I think, like over half a year.
It's just, it's hard to logistically get together. It's me and Adrian most of the time now.
We
do get together.
I like these. Every time we do one, though, because we've been friends for so long that I like doing these one-offs, because like we're literally recording in my living room. We usually record in your garage with the podcast mics, the holders, and we're literally just sitting in my living room holding the microphones while we watch Viva La Bam.
It's awesome.
It's intimate.
This is what this device is made for. It's a field recorder, what we're recording on, and it's for like journalism. In the field, in the real world. So,
yeah, it does. I feel like
life imitating art.
I feel like Geraldo Rivera right now.
I do too. I feel like I'm going to interview someone and they're just going to grab the mic and fuck her right in the pussy. The hooded bandit.
Oh, Jesus. Speaking of people that remind me of that guy, did you see David Crush is popping up in Amarillo again?
Yeah,
he was. You remember who that is, right?
Yeah.
Let the listeners know who David Koresh is.
He is
not David Koresh. I know. It is David, isn't it? It's something Crush.
It's along those Crush. Lines.
I think it's David Koresh.
He's part of the radical
religious. I would put him in the far right religious. Is what I would put him.
Christian hardcore conservative. Entity that spreads all kinds of weird messages through, like. Discomfort and just unsettling.
He was first like social media famous because he was at Westgate Mall during Christmas time, and he was yelling at kids as they tried to, they always put Santa at the middle. I don't know if they still do that, but they used to put Santa in the middle, by lids and all that.
Yeah.
And across from American Eagle. And he was there trying to tell everybody that, Santa's not real.
Yeah.
This is what Christmas is about, the word of God. And so, and then a few years went by and he was at a, what's the place where you do arts and crafts? Hobby Lobby. He was at Hobby Lobby dressed as the Grinch, another Christmas.
He did that outside of several elementary schools in town as well, which is just insane. I don't know what church he's affiliated with
here. I don't think he is with anything. I'm gonna Google him riff for a minute.
We'll get our techie guys on the ones and twos to figure that out. But the guy was recently spotted at a local high school. We won't say which high school, but you all know if you live here in Amarillo, with a sign that said,
"I don't think it's David.
Sluts go to hell."
Yeah,
along those lines, right?
Hang on, because I think this got like national. I said David Koresh.
David Koresh.
that's Branch Davidians.
Branch Davidians, the Waco Siege.
That's not who I'm thinking of.
He fits along those lines.
So let's go to hell.
He could easily be one of their disciples.
But yeah, he was on an intersection, wasn't he?
Yeah, across from a high school, public high school.
There he is.
What does the sign say?
Sluts will burn in hell.
And he was out.
He was out. He was outside of Tascosa High School.
That's insane, dude.
It's that dude. I'm trying to see if anybody says his name.
I get you want to spread like your message. You want to reach people. You want to witness to people. But like, come on, man.
I'm witnessing this man be a deranged maniac.
It's more of a ploy to gain attention to yourself, more than the message you're trying to convey. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I have nothing wrong with, like, peaceful protests or somebody that wants to, like, sit there on the, we grew up on the North Side. Yeah. There was always usually some Catholic or Hispanic Baptist. There still are, Baptist,
even on the South Side, 45th and Bell.
But majority, they would be, like, Catholic or Southern Baptist, like, Hispanic evangelists with a boom microphone. Mm-hmm. Shouting
preaching the gospel,
preaching the gospel, which and totally, and that's
totally fine.
That's totally allowable. But when you sit on the corner and sluts go to hell.
You have such a triggering phrase on a sign.
David Grisham. I knew it was David. David Grisham. That's his name.
I don't know if he's like a pastor of a church here or who he's affiliated with.
I hope I don't know, but I hope
he does a good job of like
stirring the pot. I hope he hears this and like tries to sue. I think it'd be funny.
Yeah, it's just it's just insane.
Apparently David
you have the audacity to
apparently David Grisham was a folk singer. It's not the right one.
No. You got to put Amarillo in there.
Yeah. That was like on national media, I feel like, when he first started doing it. Oh, Repent Amarillo. It has its own Wikipedia page. He probably created it. I guarantee. Probably. Okay, so Repent Amarillo. This is what he founded. Repent Amarillo, also known as God and Country or Last Front Evangelist, is a small Amarillo, Texas-based group which advocated for the spiritual mapping and targeting of specific local areas, venues, in order to exorcise demons from those areas. He 100% made this article. He made this.
You got to throw demons in there. If you
well, want, no, like when you say
the buzzwords, you got to throw that in there.
When you say that what you are and then like to exorcise demons, he made this. I'm going to continue. Because of the group's alleged tactics and targeting of perceivably vulnerable minorities, the group has gained infamy from many critics who label the organization as a hate group or a Christian analogy for the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. The group was led by former Department of Energy security guard David Grisham. He worked for the DOE.
Oh, of course.
Allegedly.
Formerly. I'm sure the departure was not amicable.
Among the number of notable actions and campaigns taken by the group include protests against supposed swingers, LGBT people. That's what it says in the in the article. It says LGBT people. abortion clinics, Muslims, Buddhists. What the fuck did Buddhists do to you? Wiccans, oh God, the witches, Episcopalians, Methodists, Greek Orthodox, Roman Catholics, and a myriad of other groups. Boycott against Houston, Texas. In January 2010, the group launched a boycott campaign against the city of Houston, Texas due to the election of an openly gay mayor, Anise Parker, and the construction of an abortion clinic in the city. Mother of God. Theological controversy. The group is a source of debate within Christian circles with whom agree with or reject blah, 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 blah. Amarillo Citizens Against Repent Amarillo. Amarillo Citizens Against... So it's another group against the group. This just reminds me of that Bill Burr joke, like, fuck your group.
Just groups birthing upon groups.
Amarillo Citizens Against Repent Amarillo, also known by the acronym ACARA, is the counter movement to Repent Amarillo. They are protesters made up of Christians, Muslims, Jews, Buddhists, and atheists.
Just everyone else. Just against them. The coalition against Grisham.
They all show up with a coexist bumper
right,
sticker.
Right, yeah.
Gathered at Sam Houston Park in order to change Grisham's plan to burn the Quran on a grill.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. Wasn't that when we were kids? He was doing that.
I mean, it was 2010. Shit. The book had been doused with kerosene while Grisham was arguing with a group of women that placed their hands on the grill asking if he would burn them too. It was when Grisham lit his lighter anyway and that a 23-year-old man named Jacob Esom snuck up from behind, grabbed the Quran from Grisham's hand, and ran after saying, "Dude, you have no Quran." This is on Wikipedia. Who typed this shit? Just someone drunk at Leftwoods.
Some this dive Wikipedia. Bar. Yeah. But don't you think that would be more divisive? His form, his tactics of conveying his message does more harm than good, and only brings more hate.
Well, that
wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. So he was a 2010 version. There's a word for that now. I don't know if you know the term for it, but there's a term for people that go online that just like try to like just stir the pot, and they're called grifters. He was
or trolls.
Yeah, he was a grifter. Like that's what his job was, and yeah, that's all it does is it makes when you engage in it, you're
seeking
part of the problem.
Confrontation. You're yeah. seeking violence. You're seeking a level of discomfort that is hostile to the point where people throw their emotions around and nothing gets solved. It's just one versus the other, hate versus hate, fire versus fire.
And that's I mean, we won't get political on this. Just vitriol. That's an allegory for everything that's happening today. That's just vitriol. Like, nobody cares about, like, if you could literally put a group of every religion, creed, political background, standing in a room together, but not tell anybody. You make a bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just everybody goes in, which happens on a daily basis. But if you just literally took the most eccentric of those personalities, right. they would 100% just go about their day. They wouldn't say anything to each other. They would go coexist. They would get along, and they would go home.
Well,
but
it's a lot of ego tripping.
What happens is you get on the internet and you think you can say anything about yeah. anybody, and that's what happens. And then we end up with like elections like last year, or 2 years ago, I guess now. That's what I'm saying. It's like
you just become more divisive over like, time.
The world isn't as bad. It's bad. It's bad, right?
Yeah.
But it's not as bad as people make it seem. It's
no. It's just more in your.
It's kind of like growing up, and you remember hearing the term "sex sells."
Mm-hmm.
Like, just negativity is more popular.
Right. Than, controversies.
Yeah. Like
more popular.
I remember, you know, the actor John Krasinski that was yes. on The Office and, you know, Quiet Place.
Quiet Place, yeah.
He had a podcast during COVID called Good News. And it was just him from his home. And he would report on, like, just mm-hmm. wholesome shit. You know what I mean? Because he was so sick and tired of turning on the TV and just seeing, like,
yeah, whether it's CNN or Fox
News. Yeah, it's all negativity, right. And that's what's in our face. But majority of those people, like everybody that you've had a negative interaction with online,
mm-hmm.
you 100% get along with them in real reality. Like, we won't get into it, but I mean, me and you have a difference of opinions on certain political stuff, but we're best friends.
Yeah.
It's like...
It's just when people try to exercise their ego and delve into their personal feelings, you know, and their stances on things that they believe, that's when you get into the realm of the unsettling uncomfortability between people. But
it's like when me and you had our heyday of fun going yeah. to bars, and
but that's all it was. Like
it's the bark,
you didn't care.
It's, well, no. What I'm saying is it's the barking dog.
Yeah.
That the one who's the loudest is usually the biggest pussy.
Right.
Whoever is sitting there screaming like, woo, woo, you sound like a choo-choo train.
Choo-choo train.
Adam Sandler, Waterboy. That's what the world is as a whole. You're just hearing loudness. It's just noise.
Right.
And it's in your face and it's negative, so it makes you want to react. But then you go to the grocery store, you go to work, you don't have any of those reactions that you have online with people. You don't see any
because they're just normal everyday interactions.
Exactly. You don't see the hate and discontent now.
But when people get in the comfortable setting of their home, they feel compelled to exercise their ego and speak about the things that get under their skin
exactly.
to make them feel better.
Now
they seek out confrontation.
There are people that are going through some shit in Minnesota, regardless of political standing.
Mm-hmm.
People are going through some shit in Minnesota, right?
But right, Minnesota.
There's a lot of people, that are at home trying to dissect shit that they don't know not a fucking thing about. I don't know about you, but I wasn't at the picket line when that lady got shot.
Right.
I wasn't there supporting ICE. I wasn't there supporting anti-Trump and all that shit. I'm not there. But people like to get online and make comments about things that they know nothing about. And that's what I'm saying. Like, the loudest people are usually the people that absolutely know nothing. If you ever want to like take a life lesson from anything, find the oldest motherfucker you know at your job, your place of business, your church, whatever, a place of gathering, and there's like some old fucking dude that just doesn't say anything,
mm-hmm.
strike up a conversation with him. Right. I guarantee you learn more in 5 minutes than you would in a week.
Exactly. And you know, we joke about the whole coexist thing, but that's how we all need to be as a community, as a people. We're in America. We're all immigrants. We all, you know,
Emma Lazarus.
We all what's on the Statue of Liberty. We commuted here from other countries. Like we are, you know, we do not own this land. The natives were here before us, but we all share this land. So it doesn't matter what you believe in or what you think is right or what you think is wrong. You're going to have those feelings, and you should. We all have that right, but don't degrade or cause vitriol and hate because you have such a strong ego that you want to just push your beliefs out there just to cause controversy.
To put my tinfoil hat, and this is just my personal opinion, but to feed off of what James just said, like that's what they want. They want us fat, stupid, distracted, and divided. Right. That's what they want. And it doesn't matter if you're left or right, red or blue. The 1% have their guy that they want in office. And everything that's happening is all part of the plan, as Heath Ledger, Joker, would say. It's all part of the plan.
Rest in peace.
And, yeah, I don't want to talk about any more about politics, but, yeah. Like,
but just love each other and be kind to each other.
Don't be stupid.
And be understanding of one another, because we're all different. We're all from different countries. We're all from different backgrounds. We were all raised differently.
Like you've
our
got
cultures are intermixed and different, but that doesn't mean we can't freaking just love each other.
Yeah,
and just
dude,
get along.
Like you know what I mean? You have literally right now as you're listening.
We're too
to this,
old for it.
As you're listening to this, you have a Dallas Cowboys fan and a Philadelphia Eagles fan sitting right next to each other that are probably going to give a hummer to each other after we get off air. So it's like if we can get along, so can you.
Hummer, that's such a 90s term.
We were talking about this the other day because I was listening to another podcast I listened to. They were like, I don't like the word tits anymore. Like it just feels too like on the nose, but like I like subtle words for it. And they were an East Coast thing, and they were like, yeah, my wife said she's got a good set of Allegheny hogs. And so like the word hogs, I like that.
Hogs or
cans.
Or milkers.
Cans
or
is cans. Funny.
Cans is very I think that's like politically correct anywhere you go. Cans.
I don't think I would ever use the word bazongas.
Peanut butter skin.
We got a peanut butter skin
and big cans. And if you know, you know.
Did he say cans in there?
Yeah. Yep.
So he knew. He was coming up with
Jason Whitlock. Shout out.
Fucking retard.
That guy was such a degenerate, and then he became like a devoted Christian, and good for him. He believes in what he believes in, but yeah, he's fun to listen to.
Hey, it's hilarious. Peter Butter skin. Well, he was talking about Joy Taylor, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Joy Taylor, yeah.
On ESPN.
Jason what, Taylor's sister.
I did not know that. Is that really?
Yeah.
I have known Joy Taylor through ESPN for years.
He's a coach at Miami now.
Oh, I knew that. I knew that, but I did not know that was his sister.
It's his sister.
You know what's funny is like, do you remember, we're watching Viva La Bam, do you remember that, I think it was Jackass 2, Jason Taylor was, when they did the stunt,
yeah.
It mm-hmm. was in when Wee Man jumped off the bridge and Preston jumped off and it pulled Wee Man down because the inertia,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And Bam actually wrote that skit.
Physics.
Because he was like, I always tried, they asked me to come up for ideas, and so I emailed him because we live so far away, and so I drew a fat ass that drug down a little man on a zip line from a bungee cord.
That's a great impression.
So speaking of, I guess,
yeah, let's go into
why
that.
Not like, you know, we're sitting here watching Viva La Bam, yep. And Jackass 5 ostensibly
Jack Flop 5,
yeah, as Bam would call it, has been announced by Johnny Knoxville on social media.
Yep.
Did you know. Watch Jackass 4?
I did, and I, you know,
fucking sucked.
It did, but it gave me warm and fuzzies because a lot of, you know, the cast that we're familiar with was in the film, but it wasn't the same because they intermixed it with so many new guys. You know, they're trying to like give birth to new,
which I
characters,
mean,
new personalities, but I couldn't.
To be fair,
fully get on board.
To be fair, the thing, like, Johnny Knoxville like tore his urethra and had to have a catheter for like 2 years because of a stunt he did. I can't remember the name of the stunt, but I know that mm-hmm. happened. There, you know, Johnny's probably in his sixties now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bam's almost 50.
Yeah, he was one of the youngest ones. Of the
yeah,
group.
Steve-O, I think in his late 50s. So I get that to do these physical stunts and some of this crazy shit, they're not physically able to do.
Right.
But it's a, you know, like I knew what Jackass 4 was for what it was. It's a cash cow. It's the South Park eating the member berries. You know what I mean? Yep. That's what they were doing. And I'm sure this is going to be more of the same. The thing that kind of irritates me, to give a little bit of Jackass lore, Bam, after Ryan Dunn died, Bam fell into an alcoholic, drug-addled rabbit hole and was surrounded himself with really toxic people, went through two divorces, had a kid with his ex-wife, Phoenix Wolf, or that's his son's name.
Yeah, yeah.
But wasn't able to see his kid, went to treatment after treatment. You know, you saw it on the news, Bam's in treatment, Bam's got sober, Bam was on Dr. Phil at one point. They had April and Phil on Dr. Phil, went through all this shit, and Jackass 4 comes out, and Bam's a fucking alcoholic mess. Then he gets clean, and for the last year and a half, he's pretty much been like telling his side of the story because he's clean now. He's just skating. He found a new wife. And
stretch coach,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, which I feel like good is, for him. Is like, have you just like stretched in a long time?
You know,
it's necessary.
You know, introspectively, I laughed at it initially, and then I kind of thought about it, and I'm like, man, that really makes sense. Like, this dude is he used to be a pro skater. You know, you've got to have a ton of flexibility, and stretching promotes flexibility, and he's actually doing what he loves, and he's in his 50s now.
And what he said
is great.
What he said is true. When you're an alcoholic, like he was, it striates your muscle tissue, and when you're a skater, like, that's the worst thing ever. It's like, if you have very dry muscles, you're not going to be able to bend well, and you're going to tear something, you're going to rip something very easily. And but anyway, you know, he went through all that shit, told his side of the story, talked shit on Johnny Knoxville, Jeff Tremaine, Steve-O, all these guys that, like, they weren't giving him... He was like, I'm fucked up. I'm going through it. And you guys are showing up to 10 a.m. FaceTime meetings with Wee Man and Dave England drunk while I'm supposed to be sober and I can't be around alcohol, but you guys can be shit-faced while we're trying to
right, and talk there's a about stipulation in film. His contract that he couldn't consume alcohol at all, yet they are heavily, you know...
They're all
on the wagon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I understand his point of view.
So
and you know what? He's only 46. I thought he was in his 50s.
No, I knew he was in his 40s. I knew 40s. That.
He's, what, 8 years older than us?
8 years older than us.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I was on Bam's side of it, and he was like, they asked him multiple times, are you going to ever be in Jackass 5? And he was like, fuck no. Jack Flop 5. I don't give a shit. I ain't ever going to be in no Jackass 5. And here we are. Jackass 5, and they're using footage that he filmed for Jackass 4 that's going to be in it, but right. He's not going to be on set, but he did sign off. And so it's kind of like...
Yeah, they're going to use archive footage.
Now we're in a situation where it's like, man, you took the check, which in Bam's case, I guess, everything he went through, I'm sure he said how much his treatments were crazy expensive.
Yeah.
He hasn't been on TV since, you know, Jackass 3D.
And to be fair, they were... shifting him and
not defending a millionaire, by the way,
right? They were pushing him from rehab to rehab, and when he got settled in, they would start over his days based on the most petty things you can imagine for money, because as we all know, when you're in rehab, it's super pricey, it's expensive, and the longer you stay there, the more money they make.
Yeah,
so they wanted to make sure this millionaire stay there as long as possible, and they were going to be super strict with him. And he voiced his displeasure with all of that and his concerns. And I kind of sided with him after a while because it made sense, you know. Like he said, he did the longest. Like it was in Florida that he did all these rehabs, but he bounced around from rehab to rehab just to be, you know, restarted at each one just so they could, you know, benefit from the insurance.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
I mean, It's crazy to me that a millionaire still goes through the bullshit hassles of healthcare that the modern person would have to.
But it makes sense. I mean, they're going to take advantage of someone.
Jesus Christ.
God, okay.
They just showed Don Vito's skin tags underneath his arm, and Phil was like, them tags are hanging out.
I miss Don Vito. And he got a raw deal, too. Dude, like,
you want to talk about getting fucked
Don
over.
Vito's fucking innocent. I don't give 100%. I don't care what you guys say.
100%. I agree.
That guy,
I will defend that to the day I die.
That guy was totally set up. And
he was at a photo signing where he's intoxicated. That the people in charge of the venue were giving him alcohol because they knew the more intoxicated he would get, the crazier, the funnier things would happen.
Yeah, they wanted the TV character to come out.
And so they started letting him take pictures with fans, and one of the fans showed up, and now I'm paraphrasing here, so don't quote me.
Right.
But I do know that he placed his hand on her breast, but I think she told him to. And he was intoxicated. These fans are coming in like by the droves. It's like I've watched people take pictures with Chris Brown after knowing what he did to Rihanna.
You got to put the Re on it
after
on the Anna,
not my wife. But after knowing what he did to Rihanna, and they still would take pictures with Chris Brown. These fans were coming in by the droves because they're like, oh shit, it's Don Vito from Viva La Bam, and one after the other, click. Picture onto the next one. One comes in, grabs the boob, tells him to grabs the boob, click on to the next one. 6 months go by and he gets like a lawsuit to appear, I mean, like summons because he's getting
sexually assaulted. He always consistently maintained his innocence.
So he said that he sexually assaulted a minor, and it turned out, yes, at the time of the incident, she was underage. But like, come on, man. Like, have I told this story about I won't even say what type of but I have a family member's friend. It is not a person that I know personally, yes. But it is a family member's friend.
Yeah.
Have I told this on air though?
I don't think so.
So it was the Bears Colts Super Bowl.
05.
Yep. And there was a Super Bowl party going on, and one of my family members' friend, he was at a friend's house that had, like, you know, just your typical Super Bowl party. And he went out, one of the friends went outside and had to take a leak because all the bathrooms were full. Men tend to do this. I don't know if you're listening and you don't have a penis, but sometimes when you're a large gathering of people and you have private places to go outside, you go and pee outside. It's happened. Everybody's done it. If you're listening and you've done it, you've done it. If you haven't done it, you're lying. So he comes back in, doesn't think nothing of it. Cops show up, knocking on the door. They ask for him by description, wearing this type of shirt, looked like this, skin color, blah, blah, blah. Answers, goes out to police. Next thing he knows, he's put in handcuffs. My family member that told me this is watching. Was interviewed, questioned. Oh, bro, we've been watching the game. It was my uncle, one of my uncles. I could say that, I guess. he's like, I didn't even really know the guy, but one of his best friends, it was their work friend. So next thing he knows, he's sitting there while trying to watch the Super Bowl and looks out the window and this dude's getting put in handcuffs. So when he went to go piss outside, there was... And you could claim, and I agree, I mean, poor situational awareness on this guy's part. But he went outside and peed on, like, facing the house that he came from. Not peeing on, like, I think he was peeing on, like, an azalea bush or some shit, right?
Yeah.
And so he's pissing outside. He's not facing the neighbor's house. A neighbor's child was outside and saw him peeing. Mm. Went inside. Told his parents, mommy, there's a man peeing outside, or there's a man outside peeing, or something like that. From the way I've heard it, he would never face the child, but the child saw him peeing. Like, you know what, like, you've walked into a urinal and saw somebody, you know that they're peeing, right? That's what this child allegedly observed, and told their parents. They called the cops. Because and so he got arrested for indecent exposure. He has had to file as a sexual offender. He has a red blip on his house for the rest of his life. because that's of that. Wild. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I mean, be careful because like I said, we've all done that.
Just be smart. Be smart. Be appropriate. Go to the restroom. Go to the toilet. I mean,
absolutely. Come on, guys. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying your life, what I'm getting at is your life can change like that.
Exactly. And you know what? Don Vito, he got, was it 10 years probation and house arrest and was required to also register as a sex offender.
Yeah. And But what I don't get is like, the house arrest thing, they were throwing in charges. They basically...
But there was no video, no photos, and no physical evidence publicly disclosed of the situation.
It was hearsay.
Which it sucks.
Did it happen? Yeah, probably. Did he know about it? No,
probably. And he ended up dying at 59 in 2015. And this happened, what, in 2006, I believe?
Yeah, they had to... I remember that there were scenes that were filmed for Jackass 3. Or no, it may have been Jackass 2. It was Jackass 2. They had scenes in Jackass 2 that they couldn't show.
Yeah.
Because they had to clip it. And they had some... Per BAM, I used to listen to Radio BAM back in the day. Apparently, they had some really good footage that they had to clip out.
The original...
I'd like to see some.
The original OGs of podcasting, if you think about it.
Oh, no, 100%. Like, I think the first like podcast... Like him and Rogan? Actually, BAM before Rogan, too. Like, Radio BAM was on Sirius XM. Before that, it was on just YouTube. And they would film... It started as... What we're watching, the DVDs, it started as a post, like... Okay, they filmed an episode of Viva La Bam, and then they would record these podcasts. Like, but and they weren't called podcasts back then. They were just like,
we need to unearth a lot of those episodes and listen.
Have a website. I'll send it to you after. Yeah, to listen. There's a website that has all of them.
Yeah, I was such a big fan of Jackass. Jackass is our adolescent upbringing.
Episode that they have Novak gets arrested on. Yeah. Because he convinces these two chicks to have sex on air, and it went against Sirius XM's code of conduct.
Oh, they were wild back then, and they were all young.
To Bam's defense about that, it's like y'all been fucking. Because remember, Howard Stern was Howard Stern before. He was on entertainment.
I used to watch Howard Stern on E! When I was a kid.
Yeah, him and Brooke Burke were my...
Like, I remember in 96
late night childhood. Howard Stern. I didn't watch like late night TV like Letterman or anything, but I watched Wild on E! For Brooke Burke. And
that's my first crush, by the way.
And Howard Stern. And she still looks great, by the way. She's 70.
I need to look her up.
Isn't that crazy? That's wild.
On E! But dude, CKY, Jackass. Oh my god! Like, it will always have a special place in my soul because it's the fabric of who we are, our personalities. The things we think are funny are because of CKY, and then Big Brother merging with CKY and creating Jackass and everything with Jeff Tremaine. I mean. What a monumental time in reality TV when this all became big, you know?
Yeah, like
in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I think of like what makes me, like my personality, mm-hmm. right? Like my humor, my
yep.
So I think of certain comedians come to mind. The top three would be like of when I was really young. Adam Sandler, Jim Carrey, and Robin Williams.
Yep.
Their movies were so influential to me and wanting to be a stand-up comedian and like make people laugh. Like I wanted to be them. And then as I got into like punk rock and skating, like that culture, and then like things like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater video games, Jackass.
Yep.
Viva La Bam. Older teen, you know
music.
What I mean? Certain bands, Blink-182, Green Day, and you know these larger than life figures like you know the Jackass crew and all that. Like I just wanted to make people laugh because it is true what they say. Unfortunately, a lot of people that have trauma or depression, they
mask through humor.
Yes, absolutely. And laughter. That's what I realized. Like I remember being like super scrawny, and I was not into sports because I wasn't, you know, this is not a shot at my father or anything, but I didn't have a male role model in my life growing up. And so when I was really young growing up on the, like, I was a pasty, redheaded,
skinny white kid
that grew up in the ghetto of Amarillo,
seeking
Texas.
Attention.
And so
through laughter,
all of my friends, and I was thinking about this the other day because I was going to talk to you. We were texting about something, and it had nothing to do with race, but like the topic was something political, and it made me think the next time I saw you, I was going to talk about this. So I'll bring it up now. It's like to fit into this conversation, being that demographic of being pasty, skinny, white, redhead, very fair skin,
right?
Growing up in the North Side Amarillo, until I met you, one of our other friends, Pierce, my friend Amos, I didn't have any white friends at all growing up. I never did. This is where we're at. Showing a tow truck driver that's trying to read the warning of the next episode, and he is struggling.
Oh, I love these parts.
The fact that this guy signed the NDA to be like, yeah, go ahead, Darren. I don't give a shit. I got to go home. Because
didn't they fucked up one of his cars or something. Okay, keep going.
But anyway, like to be that, I never had white friends until later in life. All my friends growing up when I was very young were either Hispanic or black.
Right.
And so when these issues come up of like how so many of the far right conservatives are talking about, like, you know, I think even JD Vance mentioned, or no, Elon Musk posted about it the other day, and I commented on Twitter because it was like he said something like, it was wild. It was a wild tweet for a billionaire to post, but he was like, the whites are dying at an alarming rate. And I said, because it was he was reposting a post by Tucker Carlson, and I was like, why are we giving percentages to pigmentation? Because to me, like, I don't care. Not that, like, that's stupid to say I don't see color, but to me shitty white people were just as bad as shitty other races. There was right. No, like,
yeah,
you know, if I grew up around rednecks. But poor white trash was no different than any
David
other.
Allen Coe would
in,
say.
Any other. We grew up poor white trash.
Yeah.
But it was no better, and some could argue possibly worse than any other race's worst demographic they could come up with. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I say all that to say, like, just like growing, I don't even know where I was going with that original thought.
Jackass is interwoven in your fabric, in your DNA. So
yeah, because because I always wanted to like make people laugh, so I wouldn't get my ass kicked. That was the point. That was the point to wrap
so
that
you,
back up.
You wanted to.
I wanted
the
to fit
acceptance
in,
of
so,
everyone.
Yeah,
to the point
so
where
I would do the crazy
would love
shit.
You.
I would make you laugh. I would do whatever
you,
I could.
You were
to voted be on
class
your side.
Clown, so
I was senior favorite class clown.
So that's a pretty cool accomplishment.
And yeah, I'll always have that.
It was probably inspired by Chris Pontius,
this shit.
Ryan Dunn,
yeah,
Bam Margera.
I mean, my, I used to have like a Twitter handle, and my Twitch, my main Twitch account that I watch Twitch on. I don't stream on Twitch, but the one I have is called The Random Hero.
Mm-hmm.
That's named after Ryan Dunn,
yeah.
Which is named was a pseudonym for. Do you remember the TV show? It was before our time, but it was around the 80s, 90s. The Great American Hero. Do you remember that TV
sitcom? Yeah.
So that's,
never watched it though.
Ryan Dunn was a huge fan of that, and he got the name The Random Hero is because there was a girl that was getting like flirted out with a bar at the bar, and he stepped in and whooped this dude's ass, and somebody in the background goes, "Who the fuck is this random hero?" And so that's where that came from, was The Random Hero.
But these guys really. I feel like set the stage for how we grew up and what we think is funny even now as adults. I mean, we're pushing 40 now, and the things that they do, you know, on these episodes, we still think is funny, but because it's a part of our fabric and humor that was cultivated back then.
Dico's wearing an Eagles beanie. Yeah, no, I think a lot of today's Rick Young running with an axe is
he's hilarious. Like a scientist now.
Well, he's always been. He's been a chemist, and that's why he doesn't like mustard, because he knows what's in it.
Oh, I hate mustard. I just hate the way it tastes.
Certain mustard's okay. You got to have it.
Dijon?
Give me a good...
Yeah, you're the chef.
Give me a good, not even roast beef, probably like pastrami. Pastrami on rye, you got to have some Dijon mustard on that.
But like DiCamillo, so good. You never hear from him anymore. And he's like kind of reclusive. Well, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, he apparently, they because of all this, like it fucked with him, right? Like people were like, yeah, you're the BAM dude. And it's like, well, I'm not on TV anymore. And people were still wanting him to do that shit.
He's always going to be known as that. I mean, what, he probably still lives on the East Coast. So he's going to get noticed wherever he's at. This is a big part of their lives. This is what made them famous and a household name. Especially on the East Coast.
Oh yeah, and in a place like his family grew up like in trailers across the street from Three Mile Island.
Yeah.
They have it. I think it's like his aunt Boof or something. Like they have an episode where they're growing up across from Three Mile Island, where the goddamn radiation plant's seeping out of it.
Did you know? In one of those episodes, it wasn't Deco. I think it was. Rab. Okay, Rab almost goes blind because they spray the fire extinguisher in his face.
Oh, yeah.
Damn near goes blind. Like, they had to rush him to the hospital, and they told him, you're going to lose, like, a huge portion of your sight because they sprayed it right in a moment where his eyes were wide open.
Wide open.
Yeah. It screwed his vision up.
And what's crazy is, dude is like, he was like the Matt Damon of this group. Like, he was an idiot. Like, I remember watching early CKY videos, and they made him like poop outside of a coffee. Or no, they gave him laxatives.
Yeah.
And told him to full sprint, no stop.
Yes, that's a classic.
And classic, he just like diarrheas scene. All over himself. And the dude is actually, he ended up leaving all of them after Viva La Bam and going to college in there's a town that's close to Westchester.
Is he the one that does film now? Who?
No, that's Joe Franz. He was, so the guy you always see in social media, the dude with long hair and the beard. He does do film. No, you're right. Yes, he's like a film director or producer. Rab himself does that now. I think he's directed like a couple of independent films. Jesus Christ.
So describe the episode we're watching right now.
So I'm not even sure what
this happening. Is the scavenger hunt, isn't it?
Is that what's happening?
Yeah, they have to okay. They're trying to pay the utility bill.
Yeah, April gets mad.
Yeah, that's
that they had the heating bill was so high. And so, because all of their friends, he bought a big house that his whole family and everybody they filmed Jackass with, or Viva La Bam with, lived in this house. And so the premise of this episode was they have to get a job to make the heating bill go down. So they're all going to jobs.
It's so expensive.
And so,
yeah.
And so like now
they're trying to get jobs. Yeah.
They got a paper route.
Do you, okay, I always want to ask this question because I kind of get annoyed with this, but do you get annoyed with the sobriety pitch and discussion that Brandon Novak kind of just always has to dive into and talk about? It's like, dude, we've heard it.
So
it's like,
yes, and I'll tell you why.
Settle down a little bit.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because at this point, he's exploiting it. Because
he's like a motivational speaker.
Well, that's what he does for a living. But then that's what I'm getting at. You can be a motivational speaker. Here's my card. But he uses his fame and everything that he did during that time, which you should, right? Like if I were trying to talk to addicts or everything like that, I'd be like, yeah, man, you can go on MTV and watch all my shit, that crazy shit that I did. And
just
I,
like,
but, with, it, but okay,
every celebrity on, that falls into addiction does what he's doing.
Right. After the fact. So that's what I'm getting at. He's using his past fame to be an excuse for his behavior in an attempt to financially gain or use it to financial gain. So in other words, like, hey, I was in this dark place once. I was on TV and I'm famous. Yes, I'm a motivational speaker now, but I'll constantly refer to all the crazy shit that I did. So you can remember and go look up my videos. And you know what? You understand what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I bet money to attend like one of his seminars or treatment things is incredibly expensive. I would just inherently, I would already assume that. Now, I don't know. He may be like pro bono. He just goes and speaks and he's like doing it. And maybe he's making money off of social media as an influencer or whatever. But at the same time, he's still like it's like it's almost like when you see those videos of people being like, I saw a video the other day where this guy said, what's your name? Or he's like, hey, I'm sorry, can you wrap this package? It was around Christmas time. Can you wrap this package real quick for me? And so he catches this woman outside of Walmart. She wraps this box and puts a tag on it, and he's filming her. And then he's like, what's your name? And she's like, I don't know, for the sake of argument, Rebecca. And so he writes Rebecca on the box that she just wrapped and handed the box to her. She opens it up, and it's got like $2,000 in it. And this one was a legit one. Some of those are fake. This one was a legit one, but it's like, to me, that's the same. You're pandering, and you're
it just gets played, for clicks. Played out after a while. There's, and a lot of celebrities that do fall into addiction that the resurface and rebound, they really like try to shove it down everybody's throat and like, hey, look at me.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm sober.
I'm
on a pedestal.
It's very look what I did today vibes.
Thoughts and prayers. I get put off by it, especially from him just over time. I'm like, dude, we get it. You've done great for yourself. You've really learned from your mistakes, but like, man, we're tired of hearing about it. Like, let's move on. Let's move on and do something different.
I don't know. Like, I guess it works for him. Devil's advocate to it.
He is an advocate too.
But well, that's what I'm saying. To play devil's advocate to your argument,
if
that's his job now, and then you need to like put your stuff on social media, cool. But like I said, I bet money to get him to attend a lecture or to if he offered a class, I bet if I want to know that, like, if is he offering any kind of like class for addicts to attend, or does he work with Hollywood? Yeah. Because we know that side of Hollywood is very expensive. Like the treatment centers that Bam was in are very expensive. And it's like, if he has any kind of money or intake from that, I automatically don't buy what you're
every
selling.
Time he's on a podcast, the podcast becomes circulated around his recovery story. And yeah, it's great to hear those things.
It's like, Hey,
but
you're from Pennsylvania. What'd you think about the Eagles finally winning the Super Bowl in 2017? It was great. It reminded me of when I was on heroin.
Right. And then you go into a 45-minute spiel about the things you've had to do to overcome heroinism. Yeah. If that's even a thing, a word.
Heroinism.
That's more of
heroism.
A...
Heroism.
Heroinism. Not heroism.
So like the female hero.
So like it becomes circulated all about his struggles with drugs and addiction, and it's just like, dude, I don't want to hear it anymore. And like Steve-O recently interviewed Jess Margera, Bam's brother, and
drummer of CKY.
It became a podcast about Bam for an hour, and I was just pissed off for an hour. I'm like, I don't want to hear about Bam. We've already heard about Bam. Yeah. I know his struggles.
I would like to hear about Jess. Like,
I want to hear about Jess and what he, you know, and he just kept going back to it. And I'm
it was almost like
Steve-O, come on, man.
Steve-O couldn't get Bam on, so he went to the next best thing.
Right.
Anyway, enough Bam talk. Do you and Adrian discuss Stranger Things yet?
No, we have not. We have not discussed Stranger Things.
Did you finish everything?
I have finished Stranger Things, and it's been one of those shows that has always intrigued me, has always been a show that it's like a comfort show, you know, for me. Sure. I'm not a big film person. I'm not a big TV person. I don't watch a lot of TV. But when I do find a show that I do like that settles well with me, it means a lot to me. And that show has meant a lot to me over the past 10 years. I've watched it, you know, from the time my kids were, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, all the way to where they are now, 12, almost 13, 14, 15 years old. And I've kind of grown up with it with them, which has made it a little bit more special. And it's one of those shows that really like pulls at my heartstrings. You know what I mean?
So yeah. I mean, it was a part of this period of time in your life,
right?
And it stuck with you. So what were your thoughts on season 5? Overall thoughts. No, you don't have to give any spoilers. Just like
there were a lot of cool moments. There were a lot of really cool storylines that I enjoyed. I didn't necessarily enjoy the ending, but I understood why they went that direction. And I've heard a lot of horror stories about, you know, previous shows like Game of Thrones, ending in horrific ways and
or just being underwhelming, not to the fans' expectations.
Yes, I felt like this one wasn't to the fans' expectations.
This is funny, real quick. This is the sushi thing he does at the end. Sushi.
This one didn't end to the fans' liking. However, I felt a lot of fans, you know, eventually just succumb to the understanding that it had to end this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I get it. I'll reserve my thoughts. I'm going to let you finish everything you want to say about it.
It wasn't
real quick. What's your scale of 1 to 10? What'd you give it this season?
Season 5, maybe a 6.4. And okay. I wish it would have been a little bit better. I just felt like it was kind of rushed, especially those last few episodes with the story. And the scene with Vecna, I figure that would have been like a drawn out thing that would have like lasted longer. It didn't even last long at all.
You thought they would have gave the main villain some screen time?
Yeah, more screen time than that. Henry, you know. But it was disappointing to know that it was going to be left on a quote-unquote cliffhanger. You know, that's how some people felt, or most people felt. But the Duffer brothers beg to differ. They haven't put it out there in their own words that this is a cliffhanger. It's more of a definitive ending for them.
So do you think we're going to get like a Stranger Things movie one day?
I think we should. I think they should revisit it when the kids get older.
After Conformity Gate on the internet, you've heard about that, right?
Yeah.
It, like all the fan theories that like, so I think season 5 on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a 4.
Oh, shit.
To be fair, I only really liked season 1. I only really liked season 1. And I've seen this thing posted a lot by people online saying, I wish this was an anthology, like, you know, like a Dark Mirror or Twilight Zone. Yeah. Where, like, if they did season 1 and it was just those kids, and you had season 1 and it stand on its own legs, and then you had another season where it was the Stranger Things and it was just something completely different, I would enjoy that more, I think. There are seasons I liked. I thought the last season was really good because of one particular kid. He was like, again, saying his name again, Heath Ledger. He was Eddie's character was awesome in the last season and really kind of carried that. Season 3 wasn't terrible. I didn't really care too much. I think it was season 2 where they introduced her sister and all this backstory that really never showed up again for 3 years, and then now we got this.
Yeah.
My biggest problem,
I feel like the last season was rushed.
It was rushed.
The writing of it.
Well, not so much rushed, but you have to understand too, like they were dealing with the SAG SAG strikes. I can't even speak.
Right.
They were dealing with the SAG strikes, the Writers Guild strikes, and all those things, the actors, not writers, but the Actors Guild strikes. They had this story, but they didn't have it complete, and then they couldn't film it, and these kids grew up. And I think the biggest problem is they had a story written for children, or not for children, but for actors that were portrayed by children.
Yeah,
and then now we're watching full-fledged adults act out these roles, and they're still being the same character they were in season one. And it doesn't really work. There are characters like Sadie Sink, the redheaded girl that was stuck in the Upside Down.
Yeah,
I forget Max. Her name. Max. I like her. She's a great actress. But your big stars like Millie Bobby Brown, God damn, she was terrible. She was a terrible actress this season. She was just like it almost like the whole point of a character arc is you evolve this character. And in season one, she's this lab specimen, right? She's not going to know how to interact with people. We should be seeing a full-fledged, fully involved, like we were starting to see in season three, badass that is going to be the heroine of this show.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended for Novak.
heroinism.
But
not heroism.
But then, like, besides Sadie Sink and some other actresses, as far as the kids' side, kids in quotation marks, they haven't been in anything else but this. So they don't know how to act in anything else. And so the acting felt bad by the kids. The writing, I felt, was slow, boring, and safe. Like, have you ever heard of the term plot armor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, somebody, this person's not going to die because they're important to the story. You know what I mean? Like, Lord of the Rings, Frodo has plot armor. It's his job to be Harry Potter, plot armor, right?
Right. Invincible, so to speak.
They gave that to fucking everybody, it felt like.
Except 11, it's up for interpretation at the end.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, it's all these kids and all these characters, it was worse than Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is able to... is very good, even though those last seasons are bad. I don't like the stories they told about the characters. They were able to explain character. They completed character arcs in a poor way. This felt like it had too many characters, and it's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And the whole, will you unmarry me? Shit. Was so stupid.
Yeah, when they're stuck in the ooze room.
Yeah, and so we won't spoil it, but I mean, that's... like
no,
when that
who cares?
Scene, well, yeah, I don't give a fuck. But when that scene happens,
you haven't seen it by now.
If you've listened this long, you probably obviously like the show.
And it's like them. It's like them breaking up and still respecting and caring about one another and honoring their past.
It felt the whole thing felt poorly written. It was poorly acted.
So she still wants Steve, right? She still wants his. You know,
well, no, because they did that stupid whole.
Who does she want?
15
now?
Months later, and they're all. That was another dumb thing.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I remember watching it, and I told my wife, I was like, this is supposed to be 15 months later. Why are they acting like they all have finished college and have all these jobs?
Yeah, these established jobs.
How do you do 4 years of college and become a business consultant
that
in
group,
a year and a half?
That group, they were 17 years old for 10 years.
I mean, it's stupid. It's so fucking stupid.
I understand. Like, I love it.
You're supposed to suspend reality.
The entire show was billed after the Montauk story. You know, in the 70s and 80s, it was originally supposed to be called Montauk, which was real life events that happened at a base in upstate New York somewhere. And that whole story is supposed to be mirrored off of those events.
I don't know. Like it, the whole thing felt rushed. It felt safe. Nobody could die. I was really hoping Vecnik would slaughter somebody, and he didn't. And
yeah,
it was boring. It was very boring.
Well, it's like, okay.
Why the fuck did that need to be 5 2-hour-long episodes? There was a whole lot of nothing for 3 episodes. And here's the thing. Like, we won't offend your pretty little feelings. The world is ending, and oh, hey, by the way, guys, I'm gay.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that was necessary for his character development?
No, well, for him personally, yeah, but I mean, it was already explained in the last season. We got it. It needed some way of, I get it. I understand that you, because you remember the window scene, right? When he's looking at Mike in season four. You knew that. We knew that for many years. In
season one, his mom said some things
and
made us think that.
So when I get that moment needs to happen for that character, probably. Yes, I do. Right then was not the fucking time.
Not such a a monumental like scene that just drug on.
Bro, I would not even have a problem if they did it at any other fucking moment. It's like, hey, bro, this is it. This is the game plan. Oh, by the way, guys,
I don't like
girls.
Girls.
That's fine.
Yeah.
The world is ending.
Right.
Like, they could have totally had the whole moment. It could have happened. I wouldn't have given a shit. Because, you know, like, they over-embellished in The Last of Us. They hold, you know what I mean? Like, in season one, there's a character that briefly appears in the video game for, like, 3 seconds, and then he's gone. And they made an entire episode about this character in The Last of Us and his backstory with his boyfriend. And it's like, okay, the world is ending. We're in an apocalypse.
Right.
And that person wasn't really... So I what I'm getting at is, like, I'm not trying to be rude. Like, I don't... Yes, inclusivity needs to be a thing. Have that moment. Why did it have to happen when we're plotting how to kill
the demon as long as it did, the
alternate side?
In the abyss.
It's just, I don't know. Like,
here's the thing.
Poor writing.
Where were the Demogorgons when they reached the abyss? Because that's supposed to be like the origin, that they were the minions of Vecna. Where were they at when they were attacking the Mind Flayer?
Well, and the whole place, like, where, come on. Well, the whole place where Max was.
Like, throwing some new monsters.
I get it. We know. It's almost like they insult your intelligence as a viewer, because it's like, we know, watching it, being like, yes, I know this is an alternate reality, right? That's what the upside down is. Like, it's inferred.
It's like a wormhole,
and
right?
And then, well, it's just like, it's the same timeline, alternate universe kind of situation.
Yeah.
And,
it's like a bridge
between. But then they had to say, Max is in this one place. Oh, that's not the upside down. It's been 5 seasons. We have 3 episodes left, and you're introducing a new plane of existence? It's just bad writing.
I just think the
it sucked.
Did you think the Henry storyline with him and the kids was just a little creepy and pedophilia like?
I'm not gonna touch that, but yeah,
that's all I gotta say. All right, that's all I gotta say. Like, it was weird.
I don't know. Right? It's
like, why is like, what is he doing?
I don't know.
Why does he have?
It's weird.
It's just, and him in the house, and it's like a beautiful home, and he's like trying to convince them that this reality is safe, and you know, it's like, Hollywood, are you really going there?
Hollywood sucks nowadays. You know? Like, the only thing they can do, and that's what's like funny about all these video game shows, it's like, for many years, like, I remember there's a quote by Martin Scorsese that video games are not art. And now all I see is video game adaptations. There was a Halo show. Mm. There's a Twisted Metal show. There's a Last of Us.
Member berries.
You know, Fallout. There's going to be a God of War show. And it's like, Hollywood's so bad now that all we get are bad ideas or don't know how to end things.
Recycled ideas.
Like, within the case of Game of Thrones, it's a really good show until they ran out of source material.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't copy another man's work anymore because he hasn't wrote all the books yet, so they didn't know how to end it, and it's bad.
What do you think is hindering the creativity in Hollywood to like catapult the writing, the creativity,
money,
to another level?
Money. Because here's my thing. I'm a big fan. I'm a reader, and I like books. And I'm not trying to be like some intellectual cocksucker. I'm just saying I like to read books. I like to read books. I like to play video games. I like my favorite. I rather read a book or play a video game over watch TV or a movie. Like, I don't watch many movies. That's my wife's thing. She engages in lots of movies. I'll see the big things like Sinners and the new thing with Leonardo DiCaprio that I can't think of at the moment. Like, I will watch those things. Weapons. I'll watch the things people are talking about just to see if they're worth a shit. But like, to me, like the Lord of the Rings, the first Fellowship of the Ring, that's a perfect film. Titanic, Forrest Gump, those are perfect films to
Jurassic
me.
Park, baby.
Jurassic Park. They're great films, and I don't feel like we get that anymore because Hollywood has this, that's where the money's at, right? And once you hit something good, you know, you're never going to get George Lucas's Star Wars or even American Graffiti or Steven Spielberg Close Encounters of the Third Kind or A Clockwork Orange or Jurassic Park or Shawshank Redemption, because they've been done, right? Now all we have are people that, like, we run out of ideas, and the best films, it's almost like one would argue some of the best video games are independent games. They're where the money's not there. You're seeing it in every aspect of media. Where there's money, bad ideas follow. And when you have something like video games, film, TV, anything like that, music, we see it a lot in music, right? You know, don't sell out. So you think
the money gets in the way of the creativity?
Absolutely, because also you're holding it pressure. Like you have to make, why do we have to have a sequel for everything? Why does there need to be Stranger Things season 5? Like I said, imagine if Stranger Things was an anthology where season 1 was what it was, those kids, the upside down, all that. But it ended in a way where it was either up to the interpreter, kind of like an Inception type ending, or it wrapped things up cohesively. But either way, it ended and you started something else. And yeah, it was always called The Stranger Things. And it was this Twilight Zone. We don't have things like that anymore. And it's like people just don't care enough because it's pressure, right? Why did that happen? I really don't think the Duffer Brothers, Doofer, whatever, how you want to say it. I call them Doofer because it's doofy. It's doofus. But season 1, I don't know if they really ever intended to make another season, but holy shit, it was so successful. It blew up out of nowhere. It existed in this zeitgeist. It was this big thing, and so they had to do it.
What was that show? There's a show in the early 90s, Erie, Indiana.
There's tons of great shows that nobody watched. Stranger Things, Stargate.
Reminds me of that show. In E.T., they kind of piggybacked off of a lot of sci-fi kid shows from back in our upbringing. Like they kind of just cherry picked a lot of things and just kind of mod podged it together to make this, and they did a good job if that's what it is and that's what they intended. They did a great job, but I wish it would have developed in a different way.
Yeah, I think
it's not conclusive.
No, money gets in the way of everything, and greed ruins people, and they're not able. You can't be creative. Also, like, think about it. Like, an independent artist, an independent video game maker, an independent filmmaker, they can make things without a record label telling you what to write, right?
Yeah.
An independent video game maker, you can make the game you want to make without a studio saying, hey, cut this out, or hey, we have to charge money for these to make your character look this way, right? When you have studios get involved and money gets involved, it's like, hey, your thing has to make this thing. And so, like, there's probably some studio executive saying, hey, we need these kids to feel like the kids in season 1, and we need it to feel nostalgic, and we need to make the people that started and fell in love with these characters love it. But we also need to appeal to everybody else. And don't forget to tell people that Mike is gay. You have somebody making poor decisions, and it's like, you don't necessarily not have to include that, but write it correctly.
Do you remember this show? So I'm showing you a photo of Erie, Indiana. It was a series in the 90s.
Isn't that like a afternoon?
And it's
WGN WB show.
It was like from 91 to 97.
Did you know that dude? Didn't he like look at kiddie porn or some shit? It was like the dad on Seventh Heaven, which was like the Christian family. That's Hollywood. That's another thing. Hollywood's just evil. It's like people want to make cool things, and they get involved again with money. And
I don't know. It was a show like the kids
talk about conspiracy.
Investigate bizarre paranormal occurrences in their otherwise normal small town. That's essentially what it was, and it gave Stranger Things gave me those vibes like hardcore, and also ET vibes, and I think that's what they were going for, and they really immerse their show into the 80s, which was really cool. I really enjoyed that. I did. I think they did a good job.
Do you think they ever should have gave women the right to vote?
Oh my God. Let's go down another fucking just a pitch black dirt road right now.
I just wanted to say like the most like thrown off thing that wasn't totally thrown off.
Well, you know what? I will say
I like how you're gonna go into this.
I will say I believe, and 11 is alive. So I don't know what you believe, but let's hear it. Do you think she's alive? What do you think the writing is with that?
I don't care.
I don't care.
Like, I don't.
Do you think it will be revisited in the future? Like an It. You know, remember the movie where they come back as adults?
Yeah, in 20 years, 100% you're going to get like... In 20 years, I don't know what the fuck it'll be, but you'll be like fucking old.
Well,
your balls will be like not working anymore, and you'll be sitting there watching a movie with your grandkids, and it'll be like, oh, trailer for the Stranger Things.
What's the older Wheeler sister? You're going to be like, oh,
the member berries.
What's her name?
Huh? Nancy?
Nancy is, in real life, she's 31.
Nancy Reagan.
She's 31 years old right now.
Just say no.
She's pretty hot. Anyways.
She's nice.
And they're going to have to do it within...
sort of way.
They're going to do it in about 5 to 10 years. I guarantee you. They're gonna do like one more spinoff series where they go and find Eleven and...
That's what I'm saying. I don't care. And again, you're...
Three waterfalls. Like,
yeah. You're they yeah. You're... That's what they do.
Did you like the closing scene with money. Them playing the game, the D&D game?
Again, like I told Brianna, I said, this is beat for beat Game of Thrones. This whole shit was ass until the very last shot. Because if you watch Game of Thrones, if you're a fan of the original Stark children, you like how that last shot is in Game of Thrones, and that's exactly what
I never saw. The
I told her,
of Game of Thrones.
We were watching starting the last episode of Stranger Things, and I said, $5, they're all playing Dungeons and Dragons at the end of this shit, and 100% it was. And that's another
predictable.
Problem. That's like, I'm not no writer. Well, I'm not no goddamn writer, but this shit is ass. I'm never gonna be in a Jack Flop 5.
I'm not gonna be
in a Stranger Things 8. Dude,
every one of these like cult TV shows ends terribly.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Walking Dead, bro.
They don't know how to end things. The Sopranos and
why do you think Breaking that is? Bad, you think it's because of money?
Partly, and then Jerry Seinfeld says a funny thing in an episode of Seinfeld where he says, showmanship, George, you got to end on a high note. They go too long.
They have a concept, but they don't have a finished concept. So they're like writing as they go, and it puts them in a dilemma because they're 3/4 of the way there, but they don't know how to end it.
Well, and
I think that's also a thing where they don't have it fully written from the beginning.
I think the big part of it too is that Mike is gay. See what I did there? We're like deep in this conversation, and I just said that Mike is gay. What the show did.
See, that's your CKY jackass like fabric of your DNA. Like
that's acknowledging what the writers did. That's what they did. We're halfway through, or we're done with this podcast, but at the very end, I got to be like, oh, Mike's gay.
I mean, that's how it should end.
Mike's been gay. We knew that. Been gay.
He's gay since season one.
Do they still sell Been Gay? Icy Hot kind of ate their lunch.
I never used any of that stuff.
It was Icy Hot before Icy Hot. It literally had the same ingredients.
You should never touch your junk with it.
100% Icy Hot ripped off Ben Gay.
What retro game won your childhood?
Retro game?
What retro game won your childhood?
There's two. One you would have never heard of, which would be Mega Man Legends 2. Mega Man Legends 2.
Mega Man has the freaking blaster.
Right. Mega Man was always known as this platforming game. But listen. I've heard that one is so... Listen.
Culty. Why?
Because they're hard.
It's a platform game, right?
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. That they were always this thing. But Mega Man Legends and Legends 2, Capcom wanted to make how Zelda was Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. They became these 3D games. Zelda was always this 2D RPG. And they wanted their character. So they made a 3D Mega Man game where you went on missions and quests, and it was really cool, and it had the story and these characters. That and probably Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 or 2. Because that, you know, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 came out in 98. Pro Skater 2 came out in, I think, 2000 or 2001. Mm-hmm. And 98, that shit, I was 11.
11, yeah.
And that's what introduced me to
spring chicken.
If I would have been taking a drink, I would have spit it all over the floor right now. That is an inside. That is a deep cut if I've ever heard one. Oh man, inside joke as hell right there. Leave that. Leave it just because nobody's going to.
What console was Mega Mine originally on?
Mega Mine?
Mega Man.
Mega Man. Damn, Margero. He's like, I don't want to play this goddamn Mario shit. I want to play Mega Man. Do you got any Mega Man?
What console is that on? Like,
it started on the Nintendo.
Like
the 1987 NES, Nintendo Entertainment System.
See, my first console was Super NES.
Mine was technically, I got two, but my dad's house, we got my uncle Chad's Nintendo, and then my mom bought me a Sega Genesis. So my technical first Christmas console was a Sega Genesis.
Okay.
Sega Genesis. And then what's crazy is, like, as much of a hardcore, because I mean, you know, I do a gaming podcast, like I can tell you two things that I'm super knowledgeable in: the Philadelphia Eagles and video games. and I could go down rabbit holes for days for those
Jackass trivia.
But like, Sega's considered the redheaded stepchild of gaming. It was the lesser console. Like, it was like games were better on, because the Sega missed out. Like, there was the NES, the Sega, then the Super Nintendo. But the Sega released too early, so it couldn't do what the Super Nintendo could do.
Was that the Genesis, the first one?
No, the Sega
Saturn? No.
No.
That was mid-90s.
Master System. That was the original. That was,
see, I never
that,
owned that, a Sega
system. We didn't get Master Systems
until
here.
Dreamcast.
We got Master Systems when we got Nintendo Entertainment, so NES, the gray with the, you know, Duck Hunt and all that shit.
Yeah,
there were Sega Master Systems, but nobody fucking bought them. They were very popular in Japan. But yeah, like, you know, I played Sonic. One of my favorite video games of all time is Super Mario Brothers 3 on the Nintendo.
I've heard Super Mario Brothers 2 is one of the most popular. Is that true?
No. 2 was not played at all. You're thinking of Super Mario 3. Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo, and then Super Mario Brothers 3. Those are the two most, like, best. If you want to play a Mario, hey, jump, smash the block, jump on the enemy, Super Mario Brothers World on the Super Nintendo, Super Mario Brothers 3.
So there's a game.
3 is the best. It's the one where he dresses like a raccoon and he flies with his tail. That's my favorite. That's one of my favorite games.
There's a game that I've heard is super rare and expensive on the NES, and it's a track and field game.
Yeah, it was, because it was bundled.
Stadium Events, I think that's what it's called.
It was a bundled game. It was only in certain regions that the game came. You know, like, you would buy here in Amarillo, if you bought a Nintendo at Target or Walmart, you got Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt. It came bundled with it in a same cartridge type thing.
Yeah.
But in certain regions, they got that shit, the track and field game. So you'd use the same gun they used in Duck Hunt for the, like, there was like skeet shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very rare to come across.
And the E.T. game is like one of the worst games of all time. So however, it's very desirable.
So very close to it's around. Like, it was right outside of Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Yeah. They dumped them.
It was so bad of a game. It was on the Atari 2600. E.T. the movie video game.
Yeah.
It was bad. Nobody liked it. And they made a fuck ton of copies because they were like, hey, we're going to make money. It's a Steven Spielberg film. We're going to make money off of this. We're going to profit off of this. It was like one of the first licensed games. I actually think it might be the first licensed video game. Like, you know what, licensed, like Star Wars or E.T. It was the first licensed video game.
Like
I'm pretty sure.
A movie franchise.
Yeah,
like
I'm pretty sure it was. Film. I'm pretty sure it was the first one, and they made way too many copies, and nobody bought it. It was so bad, and so they took them and they buried them in a landfill.
Yeah,
and a lot of people, if you can find that, it's actually not it's actually not that expensive. They made a lot of copies of that. I'm a big Castlevania fan. It's one of my favorite Metroidvania games of all time. Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, was fucking everywhere. But actually finding Castlevania 1 is expensive and it's hard to find.
Is there a game that you would like to own that you've always wanted to own, but you would never play?
Like keep framed or something?
Like keep like in, a, like in a hard graded copy? Case. Like if you could get your hands on it.
Yeah.
A retro game.
Pause for time. Yeah, probably if we're talking something retro, it would be like Final Fantasy IV, because it never came to America. Final Fantasy IV was technically Final Fantasy VI in America. And that cartridge was only in Japan. So something like that.
Is that the one that's gold?
No, that's or Zelda. That's Zelda.
Oh, the Zelda,
that
yeah.
That is Zelda. And that's actually, if you have one that's gray, that's worth more.
Yeah.
Because the gold one was sold more. Retro to me still, I think pre-2000 is retro technically. So,
right.
A signed copy of Metal Gear Solid from 1998 on the PlayStation 1 by the director, because he's considered like he's like the Spielberg.
That would be your
games.
Holy grail.
Yeah. He's like that director, Hideo Kojima. He's like considered like the Spielberg or the, he's probably, what's the dude that did, Stanley Kubrick. He's probably the Stanley Kubrick, you know, like these weird obtuse things that you have to think about.
Yeah.
He just released a new game last year, a sequel to a game, and it's like a mind fuck. But he's weird and out there, but he made Metal Gear Solid, and to like, I have that out. I have the original copy from PlayStation 1. I have the disc hanging in my little
man cave
collection. But to have a sealed signed copy by him, yeah, that'd be it.
See, that's something that like I could see myself getting into one day, is like all the games I played as a kid. Have them, you know, own a copy that was like graded and sealed, like original Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah. The thing is now it's super expensive. Like I have a ton. I have a tote stashed away. I have every console I have a Nintendo. I don't have a Super Nintendo or Genesis, but I have a 64, a PlayStation 1, a PlayStation 2, a PlayStation 3, original big beefy boy Xbox, the Duke. They call it the Duke, the big thick original controller for the Xbox, because it was so fat.
Mm-hmm. Mine got stolen.
I have the Duke. I have a 360. I have a Wii, a GameCube, and a lot of video games.
I never got into GameCube.
But yeah, I have a ton of and a lot of PlayStation 2 games. I've probably like over 100 PlayStation 2 games. But a lot of that shit's expensive. And like retro gaming, because it became a hobby about 4 years ago, probably around the time COVID. That's crazy that shit was 6 years ago. But
I know, it's wild. I mean, this podcast feels like has been yesterday. Going on since COVID.
But about COVID is when retro gaming started to increase.
Mm-hmm.
People started like buying the shit out of it, and it became harder to find. So I actually have quite a bit of stuff that ain't worth shit now, but I'm sure will be worth money one day.
Right. Especially condition is everything, and that will drive up the value of anything you own, whether it be sports related, video game related, even jeans, dude. I've seen Levi's that are vintage, like thousands of dollars.
You know,
like,
what are we doing? You came over today wearing a starter jacket, Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Is that an original?
It's original from 95, 96.
How much was it?
Dude, I bought that for like maybe $60 on eBay, which it's a mirror copy of the one I owned as a kid, which I still have.
But it's the same one. It's from that year.
Yeah, it's the same exact jacket. The original one I still have in my kid's closet, and it's got my name embroidered on the back. I've got a couple of them, actually.
Like my wife got me an Eagles Kelly Green starter windbreaker, but I mean, it's a replica. It's a new thing.
Yeah, anything vintage, it comes back around and it becomes valuable.
Yeah.
And especially video games, like, I know the systems, like, if you've got a box to a system that's in great shape, you can sell that box alone for a few $100.
Yeah, my 64 that I have is, like, pretty, like, there's nothing wrong with it.
And do you remember the 64s that were, like, clear?
Different
colors.
The translucent teal, green. There was red. There was, like, lime green, yellow. And
there's a controller you can get, an N64 controller, that is from a gaming competition that's gold. It's got a gold and metallic finish to it.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's really rare and expensive from those video game competitions they used to have.
Once PlayStation came out, PlayStation 2 specifically, I stopped giving a fuck about Nintendo. Like, we're watching this Viva La Bam right now on a PS5 that's down there, and like, I game primarily on PC, but like, I will always, like, PlayStation is that's the shit.
Yeah. Besides my Super Nintendo, that was my second console I got. And then after that, I got a Dreamcast, which we kind of talked about Dreamcast a little bit off air.
I remember
my favorite console, bro.
You used to
play that one the most.
You had a, when we met, you had an original Xbox.
Yeah, I had an Xbox.
And we used it as a DVD player.
That thing got stolen.
And I remember, like, we were big fans of Chappelle's Show.
Yeah.
And they're, like, if you're listening to this and you watch Chappelle's Show, you know, you put two and two together. On the home screen, if you just left it home, you would hear this yoy yoy, they had a, what was it,
Alien bit where he was the president,
Bibble,
yep,
yeah, like,
he has a communication with the aliens.
Dave Chappelle was if their president was black, like the first black president, yeah, or something, because mm-hmm. this was well before Obama, you know, this was like 2004.
And so it's like 2004.
Was it 2004? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were like sophomores. And yep. Chappelle's Show was really kicking off, and they were like, well, what if there was a first black president? He would reveal aliens. And he had Bibble.
Bibble.
And they daffed up, and then you heard him go, yeah, yeah. And I was like, that's the Xbox sound.
Yep. It sure was.
And I've never heard those two noises in anything else other than the Chappelle Show and the Xbox.
And the thing that I always remember with Xbox is Halo, and that game has got such a cult following. It's still big?
So it's funny that you bring that up. It's actually, it's a very, like, deep topic to get into. We won't do that. But Halo itself, the game you're talking about specifically, Halo Combat Evolved, is they're coming out with a remake, and it is releasing this year, and it is the first time that Halo will be on a PlayStation.
Oh, wow.
They're putting on PS5 cool. and Xbox.
Nice.
So, you know, Halo Infinite was the last, like, main Halo game that had multiplayer. When
was that? End of the 2000s when that came out? Or was that 2010s?
Halo Combat Evolved?
Yeah.
The first one? The first Halo.
Well, the final Halo that
the
came
first
out.
Halo was 2001. Or 2002 was Halo Combat Evolved. The last one, Halo Infinite, came out in 2020 or 2021.
Oh, okay. See, I'm so out of touch with the modern gaming. But I just remember how big of a game that was and how everyone would get together and play.
Well, that
multi-screen.
Know, things like GoldenEye on the 64, you wouldn't have Halo
without
GoldenEye. You wouldn't have
Call of Duty. And I suck so bad at that game.
Like, multiplayer Call of Duty, like GoldenEye and Halo Combat Evolved, like those split-screen co-op games where it was first-person shooter and you played together, and then really the multiplayer versus of Halo and before that even, you know, GoldenEye. That
I did love Halo.
That really kicked off multiplayer gaming.
That was such a big game. I remember when that thing dropped. Like,
oh man, I had
all the sequels.
Tons of nights. Halo 2 specifically played the shit out of. And then Halo 3 on Xbox 360, all those games, man. Like, just my buddy Jared, he was a big Halo fan, and we'd get off work at United, and we'd be up gaming till like 4 o'clock in the morning. But illicit substances and all.
You'd have to put Tony Hawk and Mega Man.
Well, I mean,
above everything else,
my favorite video game character, like, just, and I love,
like, Mega, I mean, those Man, two won your childhood.
Mega Man games, like, I like. I guess if I had to pick a top five games list, it would be for sure Super Mario Brothers 3, Mega Man 2 would be on there. The Last of Us. My daughter's literally named after one of the characters. Resident Evil 4. And probably The Witcher 3. Like, so, you know, two recenter games. The Witcher 3 came out in 2015. The Last of Us came out in 2013. And then Mega Man 1980. Mega Man 2 was 1988. Mega Man's as old as me. He was born in October of 87. It was the first Mega Man game.
Born in October of 87.
I feel like that game was never a huge commercial hit. It wasn't popular
over here, no.
But it's a cult hit.
When I became, like, when I started, like, getting good at games in, like, the early 2000s, was the first time I played Mega Man. And it was like, I grew up with Super Mario. Like, that's why Super Mario Bros. 3, it's not incredibly easy, but it's not hard. Like, mm-hmm. as long as you get the controls down and it's just, you just jump, right? But Mega Man, you do all the jumping and you have to shoot and dodge shit at the same time. And the controls are kind of stiff and it was fucking hard. To this day, I can play Mega Man 2 because that was the thing. Like, it had these bosses, right? You had to, it had eight bosses. The first, was it? Yeah, eight bosses. The first Mega Man had six. But you would have to, you go fight a boss and it has like, you know, Cut Man, and he throws these like blades at you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you defeated him, you could defeat Woodman, which was like the tree that would throw like leaves at you. So you had to figure out the boss order to get, because every time you defeated a boss, you got their weapon and you could use it against a boss. And then at the end of the game, so you had to figure out the boss order. And so there's a group of games nowadays called Dark Souls and Elden Ring that pretty much copy that formula, which it's like,
yeah,
go kill a hard boss, get its weapon, go fight the next boss.
I just want to play Outlast.
Outlast. Outlast is a fun game, man. Like, it's creepy, it's scary. It's good.
Wasn't that a game originally that was like banned or forbidden?
It wasn't banned, it wasn't forbidden. It was getting some and it's kind of wild, like some of the shit that they show in it for the time, but it came out in 2013, I think. And it was it's a horror game. It's a survival horror game, but you can't fight, so you can only run or hide from the enemy.
Yeah,
and
it was like a demo that was like really gnarly.
It had to the trope of it was like, okay, cool. You're walking around the game. You're an investigative journalist, but a lot of the areas are dark. You can't see unless you. A popular thing in the early 2000s was like camcorder found footage.
Mm-hmm.
So
Blair Witch Project.
It played off of that like, yep, you had to pull up the camcorder to see. And it was like one of the first things that did that. It used the night vision of a camcorder to see. And it was, it has suggestive themes. It takes place in a mental asylum. Mm-hmm. But it's sci-fi. It's a little bit out there.
I liked that one. I remember watching you play that. It freaked me the hell out.
I love scary games. Like, to me, Jesus Christ, that toenail. To me, a scary game is more intense than a scary movie, because you're like, Brianna watched me play this game called Layers of Fear, where you're inside a painter's nightmare. He's an artist. He's a painter. Yeah. But you exist in his nightmare, in his paintings, and you have to navigate your way through that. And there were things I'm like, oh man, shit. But, and she was just there for the laughs, but she was like, I don't understand why this is kind of creepy to you. Because as someone who would watch, you know, Michael Myers slaughter somebody on screen, what you're seeing between pixels isn't very scary to the viewer, right?
Right.
But if you're experiencing it, you're putting yourself into that, and you feel a part of that.
You're immersed in the chaos. Yeah, I remember you playing that demo of Outlast. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
And that was super scary.
Tapped out.
We're approaching the finish line.
I'm going to tie one off and kick James into the frigid night.
You're kicking me into Snowmageddon, and I'm ready.
Do you think anything's even happened since we've opened the door?
Nothing's happened.
I don't think so either.
It's just frigid outside, probably like 2 degrees.
It was 6 earlier. Let's see where we're at now. Let's see what we're sitting at now.
I'm sure we only get like 3 to 4 inches, I bet. By the time this is posted, I'm sure
we're all alive. It's dropped 1 degree. It is cold as fuck.
5.
It's 5.
My God.
It was 6.
Well,
maybe it'll be 7.
Our Bomb City darlings, stay warm. Go play some video games. Watch some CKY.
Don't let women vote.
Watch some Jackass.
I'm just kidding.
And be kind to one another.
Absolutely.
Don't spew hate. And we're approaching year 6 of Bomb City Locker Room Talk. Stay tuned.